Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Exco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. Ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
All right, hello, Toll listeners. Kurt here. That silence is missed sales. Now, why? It's because you haven't met Shopify, at least until now. Now that's success, as sweet as a solved equation. Join me in trading that silence for success with Shopify. It's like some unified field theory of business. Whether you're a bedroom inventor or a global game changer, Shopify smooths your path. From a garage-based hobby to a bustling e-store, Shopify navigates all sales channels for you. With Shopify powering 10% of all U.S. e-commerce and fueling your ventures in over 170 countries, your business has global potential. And their stellar support is as dependable as a law of physics. So don't wait. Launch your business with Shopify. Shopify has award-winning service and has the internet's best converting checkout. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theories. All lowercase, that's shopify.com/theories. Luis Elizondo is a former U.S. Army counterintelligence special agent who's gained notoriety now for being the director of the now-defunct ATIP program, which was a program initiated by the Defense Intelligence Agency in order to study unidentified aerial phenomenon, also known as UFOs. For those new to this channel, my name is Kurt Jaimungal. I'm a filmmaker with a background in mathematical physics, dedicated to the explication of what are called theories of everything, from a theoretical physics perspective, clearly, but also exploring the potential connection consciousness has to the fundamental laws of nature, if those fundamental laws exist at all. The UFO phenomenon may seem tangential, but if you watch the podcast with Kevin Knuth, linked below, you'll see that there seems to be an intimate connection between some of the deep mysteries of the universe and this phenomenon. Thus, I'm interested, and I don't view this enigma with a stigma. I'm not averse to it like much of the scientific community is. Lou has revealed more in this podcast than in almost any other interview, and that's due to the exquisite questions provided to me by you, as this was an Ask Me Anything. In fact, it was a live AMA. So Lou and I both thank you for that. Each podcast on this channel is punctiliously timestamped. Just look at the description, and you can navigate to whichever question you'd like to directly. There are a couple sponsors of today's podcast. Algo is an end-to-end supply chain optimization software company with software that helps business users optimize sales and operations, planning to avoid stockouts, reduce returns and inventory write-downs, while reducing inventory investment. It's a supply chain AI that drives smart ROI, headed by a bright individual by the name of Amjad Hussein, who's been a huge supporter of this podcast from its early days. In fact, Amjad contributed some questions to today's AMA, and you can visit Algo by going to algo.com. A-L-G-O. The second sponsor is Brilliant. Brilliant illuminates the soul of math, science, and engineering through bite-sized interactive learning experiences. Brilliant's courses explore the laws that shape our world, elevating math and science from something to be feared to a delightful experience of guided discovery. More on them later. If you'd like to see more conversations like this, then please do consider visiting patreon.com/KurtJaimungal and contributing whatever you can. Each dollar helps tremendously. There's also a crypto and a PayPal account which has been opened up recently in case donations there are more in line with what you'd like to use. In a couple weeks, I'm speaking to Chris Langan, who's famous for having the highest recorded IQ in America, on his cognitive theoretic model of the universe, which is a theory of everything. Tomorrow, I'm also speaking to Jeremy Corbell. There's plenty more to be announced, and again, if you'd like to support this podcast, if you'd like it to stay at a technical level, which requires plenty of preparation, then please do consider becoming a patron or donating in some other way, shape, or form. Thank you so much, and enjoy. So first, I'm going to get to a question that I had, which is there a correlation between any of the characteristics of these UAPs, UFOs, and some other characteristic. For example, let's say that the tic-tac-shaped ones are more violent or the pyramidal-shaped ones are faster. Is there a classification of them, and do they have some other characteristic associated with them?
So the characterizations that we have seen to date really is a result of size, believe it or not. So, and this is by no means comprehensive, but what we tend to see are the smaller vehicles tend to be, think of a sports car, are your saucer-shaped vehicles. Whereas the larger vehicles, let's say a school bus size, is that of a cylindrical object, or roughly that of a tic-tac, or even sometimes described as a telephone pole. And then in shape, so cylindrical. And then the large ones tend to be not always, but almost exclusively either triangular shape or boomerang shape. Now, there are some anecdotal, if you will, reports of large saucers as well, and some shapes looking like a dumbbell. But the three primary categories tend to be that we saw in ATIP were disc shape, and then you have the longer cylindrical shape, and then finally a large triangular shape vehicle. The triangle vehicles are often described as flying very close to the ground and very quiet, silent, and seem to kind of lumber, if you will, from place to place, very slow, almost like you would imagine a large dirigible, perhaps, just kind of floating there silently. The apex of those triangles are often described with lights of some sort, or emitting some sort of radiation in the visible light spectrum, which to a lot of the if you will, people who reported this information, to include first responders, we'll often see the lights changing color, and maybe a result of some sort of Doppler shift that's occurring, red-blue Doppler shift. But that's in essence the three primary shapes that we have had reported.
And are these shapes associated with any other characteristics? For example, violence or non-violence or the shutting down of nuclear missiles?
Yeah, Kurt, that's a great question. You know, so there's a difference between when we say something's a potential threat and hostile intent. And I think people have confused the term potential threat. When we say potential threat, you know, as a physicist, there's a lot of things in nature that are potential threats, but don't mean to harm you, right? It's, for example, I've often said, if I go to an airport and I get on a 737, there's no real threat there. But if I were to jump off and run along the runway, the tarmac, and I happen to get too close to one of these jet engines as it's, you know, going down the runway, chances are there's going to be some sort of biological consequence. There's an environmental threat to me. I'm probably going to lose some hearing. I'm probably going to get burned by the jet exhaust. It's not necessarily an intended consequence of the jet engine to harm me. And so anytime you're dealing with physics, and I think this topic of UAP certainly nests well within the realm of physics, there's always potential threat. And that's just the way it works. If you ever go to the CERN, the Large Hadron Collider, you're talking about a massive machine, the world's largest machine, in fact, ever built. And it's hurtling some of the smallest particles around nearly the speed of light. And if you look at the shielding that is around the accelerator, it's massive. You would think for something so tiny and infinitesimally small, why do you need such a big machine? Well, it turns out that, you know, there's potential consequences when right. You're taking a particle of matter and you're accelerating it to the speed of light. Almost the speed of light. Correction. I think we need to be careful when we go down that rabbit hole and say something is you know threat versus hostile intent. You said, is there any signs that these things are displaying some sort of, you know, overt hostility towards us or violence? I think you said. We in ATIP didn't see any overt signs of, as you say, violence. But, you know, there are individuals who have reported that they've had contact, and whatever that contact is, it's not always been pleasant, according to some of the eyewitnesses. Now, the question is, have those eyewitnesses really had a close and personal interaction with this, or is it some sort of psychological manifestation that is occurring? We simply don't know. For that reason, we were very careful not to stipulate any type of intent behind these things. And we focused, the only two things we really focused on in ATIP was, what is it and how does it work? We were nowhere near getting to the point where we understood its intentions or who was behind the wheel or the origins of these things. It was simply just, as you can appreciate, a scientific approach. What is it and how does it work? And if we could answer those questions, maybe we'd have a better chance of answering some of the other ones.
You also mentioned that the June report may be a whole lot, a whole lot of nothing. Now, why do you say that and why do you think that is? And have you been briefed as to what's going to come out in the news report?
Yeah, I mean, let me turn that question right back around, Kurt, and ask you a question. You know, if I were to write a 74-page dissertation about a black hole today, it'd probably be a lot more comprehensive than if I were to write a 74-page dissertation about a black hole back in 1965. Because at the time, these were theoretical objects that we weren't even sure if existed. Some scientists believe that they couldn't exist, that these were just some sort of anomaly within Einstein's calculations. So we don't have a really good, firm understanding of these things. And so, you know, what are we going to provide to Congress? Well, we know that they're not U.S. technology. Okay, that's a pretty big step forward. But other than that, you know, we're still at the point where we don't know if these things are some sort of foreign adversarial technology, which it looks like they're probably not, or there's something else. So, you know, there's not a whole lot you can say about that. You can say, look, there were, you know, 170 some incidents of these incidents. They performed in this way. These were the organizations involved. These were the people involved. This is the radar. This is the video. Here's the photographs. Here's the eyewitness testimony and reports. But at the end of the day, you know, we still don't know what we're dealing with. So I'm not sure we're going to be able to, in a 74-page document, conclusively state and satisfy what something is and satisfy people's curiosity. I think as time goes on and we continue to look at this enigma and perhaps create a whole of government approach, hopefully those reports each year become increasingly more forthcoming. And we'll have additional details and fidelity. But I think it's just too early right now. Look, we just got to the point where Congress and the American government agree that these things are real. So how much can you possibly expect an organization in 180 days? And by the way, let's not forget that the COVID restrictions, most of these people couldn't even go to work. You know, I try to be realistic.
Well, to be fair, some of your interviews, what I glean from them in an hour is quite substantial. So I can imagine that if someone's given, a team of people are given 180 days, they can come up with what could shock people.
You just said it. If you have a team of people, they didn't have that. The UAP task force was minimally manned. It had two people and they were only part-time assigned. So that part of the argument isn't, you know, it hasn't been substantiated. And then the other part is 180 days. I would submit to you, it takes, as I've said before, longer to remodel a kitchen sometimes. Than 180 days. You're asking the entire intelligence community and the Department of Defense to collect the data, synthesize the data, process the data, and then author the data, and then coordinate that data through all 18 agencies of the intelligence community, have it reviewed by the lawyers, have it signed, sealed, and delivered by the Secretary of Defense, then to the Director of National Intelligence, and then finally on to Congress. And oh, by the way, there's, you know, COVID we got to deal with. So anything classified, which most of this report is classified, you can't do it until you get to go to work.
Right.
So I think, you know, we're really expecting a lot. It's almost like expecting Mike Tyson to fight in a boxing ring with, you know, both hands tied behind his back. It's just not, I don't see how that's reasonable.
He would still defeat me. Okay.
And me too, I'm sure.
As for the fidelity, you mentioned fidelity, and a question that's been brought up by quite a few people, I don't have a single username to single out, is, are there videos, pictures that you've seen that are not so grainy, not so far away, but instead up close, exact, let's say, such that someone who is on the fence about this issue would no longer be on the fence?
Yeah, and I think you're seeing that with Congress. I mean, there's videos and photographs and reporting that I've been privy to that are extremely compelling. I've said for the record that the three videos that have come out, as interesting as they are, they're probably the least compelling of the ones that you know we had. And this is why I'm so concerned about now the recent revelations that the Pentagon has deleted or destroyed my emails and my files, because there were documents in a very comprehensive shared folder that we had that was you know pretty incredible. I mean, there was some very high definition, high fidelity videos in there that when you looked at it, you realize, hey, you know, that's not one of our aircraft.
Many in the audience had one more question with regard to this issue, which is, why now? Why all these revelations from the government all of a sudden? Because we weren't able to get to it over the live stream, I emailed him and his assistant got back, saying, as for your question, why now? Why not now? Nothing will ever change. Nothing will change if a few brave men and women don't stand up to speak out about what they know. Lou has talked about this many times in many interviews. He was trying to raise the alarm about this issue, but it wasn't getting reported up the chain of command to the Secretary of Defense. In the U.S. defense community, if someone is frustrated with bureaucracy, there is no way to circumvent the chain of command. So it's typical for those people to resign, and then it's often the resignation letter, which finally makes its way up the chain to effect change. That's exactly what happened in Lou's case. Feel free to reference previous interviews that he's given where he's answered this question. Have there been any investigations as to the connection between remote viewing and UAPs? So you can interpret that the way you'd like.
Wow, great question, Kurt. Historically, yeah, that there was some effort, particularly in the 70s and the 80s, during a program that one of my colleagues was responsible for, the Stargate program. And before that, it was Real Flame, and before that, a bunch of other names. But Dr. Harold Pudoff can probably give you some more information on that. During our time in ATIP, we didn't really focus on that. We were more focused on the nuts and bolts. But yeah, there was some interesting information that was put out in the past about the connection between remote viewing and potential UAP activity. There was one, alleged remote viewing session where they were remote viewing a particular enemy target, a sea-based target. I'm not going to go into more detail than that. I don't know if I can. But apparently there was some sort of UAP activity associated with that. The problem is when you're talking about remote viewing, it's very subjective. And so you have to be very careful when you're dealing with data like that, because it's at the end of the day, you need more information. You need information to substantiate. That may be one piece of the puzzle, but by no means can you put together the entire mosaic with just one piece of the puzzle. You need all the pieces to really, really, you know, understand what you're looking at.
You mentioned someone's name about a minute ago, Harold. What was his last name?
Pudoff.
Okay, yeah, I have a question about that from Jeremy Riss of the channel Alien Scientist. He wants to know, have you ever heard of something called the Invisible College? And then as a secondary question, was this theoretical physicist who brought you into the program, you mentioned this before, that someone brought you in to ATIP, was it Hal Pudoff?
I'm very well aware of the term Invisible College. I am also very well aware of Hal. Hal is a dear friend of mine. He did not bring me into this program. But we wound up working as colleagues. He's an incredible human being. Him, another individual named Dr. Kit Green, another fantastic human being, an absolute American treasure. And there's a couple others. Dr. Eric Davis is another one. I really was very fortunate. I had the opportunity to truly stand on the shoulders of giants. It was an incredible honor for me. And there's many others that I won't mention right now, but Dr. Colin Kelleher and a bunch of others that were, you know, really, really helpful in the early days of this effort.
What is it that you've heard about the Invisible College that you can reveal that you feel like is credible? I just heard the term yesterday.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a loose affiliation of individuals, you know, thus the term invisible. College being that these are individuals who obviously have a high academic vitae to their name. You know, it's more of a loose affiliation necessarily than a formalized corporation. You know, it's the, you might also hear terms like the aviary, which you know, there's some truth to that. There are some individuals that belong to an organization And to remain anonymous, they had names of birds associated with them.
So names of birds.
Birds, right. That's the term aviary. And what it did is it gave them an extra degree of anonymity when having discussions, you know, especially over open lines or the email, unsecure email. You know, that's it's just a extra layer of operation, what we call OPSEC.
Speaking of academia, this question comes from Professor of Astronomy Brian Keating, who runs the Into the Impossible podcast. Is there any test or data that would convince you that every UAP sighting has a prosaic, natural, or a scientific explanation, i.e. anything that could falsify the narrative that alien technology is visiting the Earth? Now, I know we can put a clause to that and say whether or not they're visiting or whether or not they're from a dimension that is... you and me may not like the term dimension in the way that it's used in common parlance, but we can couch whether or not it's visiting. You understand what's meant by the term alien.
Yeah, I do. So, Kurt, I'm going to ask you a favor to repeat that question one more time, because there's a bit of a contradiction in there. And I want
Sure. Great. This comes from Professor of Astronomy Brian Keating, who runs the Into the Impossible podcast, which I recommend you all check out and subscribe to. Is there any test or data that would convince you that every UAP sighting has a prosaic, natural, or scientific explanation? I.e., anything that could falsify the narrative that alien technology is visiting the Earth.
So, interesting. Natural or scientific prosaic explanation, and then turns around and says, i.e., disproves some sort of alien visitation. I'm not sure the two are mutually exclusive. I think you can have a discussion about alien life and still remain scientific. We're doing it now with NASA looking for microbial life on Mars. They're not exclusive. You can't say on one hand, you know, there's a scientific explanation, but it's not, but it disproves alien life. Scientific explanation may wind up actually proving alien life if there is. So I think with all due respect, I think that's false logic. I don't, no offense to Mr. Keating at all. I'm sure, you know, he wants a thorough answer, which I'm going to try to do my best. But the very notion that an alien life form can't be scientific. Look, this planet is probably the greatest UFO that we know of, right? This ball called Earth hurtling through deep space around a, you know, obscure star we call the sun and an obscure part of the Milky Way has got life all over the place. In fact, the birth of science was right here. And it was the study of other living organisms. Look at Darwin, right? So I think we need to be careful when we subscribe to the fact that if it's alien, it can't be scientific, or if it's scientific, it can't be alien. I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. I think we realize now with the understanding of extremophiles that life can defy a lot of our definitions and continues to defy our definitions. So we have to keep reinventing new definitions of what a life form is. You know, initially we thought all life forms were something that were based on the building blocks of photosynthesis. We now realize that's not true. There are extremophiles that live and survive of chemosynthesis in the deepest parts of our ocean, a completely different way of obtaining nutrients from its environment. We also realize that the understanding that life form must have DNA, we now realize may not be true also. In the world of virology, we see all the time viruses which can replicate and behave very much like a living thing and yet have no DNA associated. They have RNA. So I think we have to be careful when we ask questions, especially as scientists. We have to make sure that to really embody the essence of science, we have to be willing to ask the hard questions, because that's the only way science really advances. Otherwise, we would be stuck thinking that the four elements of the earth are earth, wind, fire, and water. You know, we've now realized this thing called the periodic table. We now realize this thing called subatomic particles and quantum physics. Had we have just stuck to that as being science and not challenging the ecosystem of science at the time, we never would be here. We never would have had Newtonian physics. We never would have had Einstein's relativity. We wouldn't have quantum physics. So again, I caution one more time against the idea that science and a scientific explanation will automatically rule out something alien. Now, I think what he was trying to say, your friend, Mr. Keating, and I, and I, I forgive me for going this long-winded explanation.
Sure, go ahead. And I appreciate how you're taking notes. I appreciate the seriousness to which you're answering these questions.
I think what he's probably saying, asking me is, hey, Lou, is there any examples that you can say that, A, you have found a prosaic explanation for something that initially seemed unidentified or perhaps, you know, extraordinary? The answer is absolutely yes, we have. In fact, that was the intent of ATIP, to go into something, trying to find, is this a drone? Is this some sort of cruise missile? Is this some sort of new type of aircraft or helicopter or blimp or dirigible, or, you know, atmospheric anomaly, you name it, fill in the blank.
Is there a checklist, by the way, that one goes through? Like, is it a lens flare? Is it a drone?
So yeah, there's absolutely. And you have, when you have the experts that are, you know, experts in those particular fields, such as photography or video or whatever, they're going through that mental checklist. Is it an artifact, right? Is it a software glitch? Is it a lens flare? Is it a scratch on the lens that now is being hyper magnified? And so you get this weird scattering of light effect. And it looks like you have a real object there when you don't, right? And so that's when you compare it to the infrared. And that's when you compare it also to the radar, when you compare it to the eyewitnesses, right? Because, you know, when you have that amount of information now all verifying that something is real, then you can start scratching up the fact that it's some sort of artifact or, you know, lens flare, et cetera, you know, that there were times where we were able to do that. And it's a bit satisfying because you can kind of take that off the list. What for us was so difficult were the ones that fell so far beyond what we would normally presume as capabilities that we have in our inventory. Again, the instantaneous acceleration, hypersonic velocities, transmedium travel, and you know, seemingly anti-gravity without associated technologies, no wings, control surfaces, no obvious signs of propulsion, no heat signature. And yet the things were able to defy, you know, the natural effects of Earth's gravity. Those are the ones where you say, okay, now we're not probably dealing with, you know, a helicopter. We're not dealing, there's no rotor wash. There's no heat signature. There's nothing at all that we can look at with the multiple sensors that we're looking at something and say, yeah, that fits within the paradigm of, you know, our existing aviation technology. So there you have it. I didn't mean to, again, go into a long-winded conversation.
I prefer long-winded, man. I'm a meticulous person. I also noted that you said mental checklists is what they go through. And I was curious if due diligence is a physical checklist or a standardized one, a formalized one.
Yes, but those, depending on where that expertise resides. So if you're asking, for example, a CIA analyst who's an expert in optics, they're going to go through their own checklist differently than a radar person who's an expert in radar and telemetry, who's going to go through their checklist. So, you know, there's not one single checklist, because depending on the expertise that's being used and leveraged, just like talking to a cardiologist versus a radiologist, right?
Right. They're both medical doctors,
but they're not going to go through the same checklist, you know, when looking at someone's heart. You know, one's looking at it from a X-ray perspective, one's looking at it, you know, maybe from a biological and metabolic process perspective. So those checklists exist, but they're not consistent across the board.
You mentioned transmedium as well. I'm curious if you've seen any footage where a UAP goes from air to water, and is there a splash involved, or do they just submerge as if it's an illusion, let's say, or an artifact of light? Not saying that they are artifacts of light. I'm just curious if they displace the water in any formidable fashion.
Yeah. Well, Kurt, there seems to be some sort of interaction. I will state that there's been plenty of reports that we have where the water seems to be perturbed, that there is a disturbance over the water. And there's several hypotheses that have been proposed for that. No different than when you have a helicopter hovering over the water, you can see the water being a bit perturbed from the rotor wash. Yet these don't have rotor wash, but the water seems to be perturbed, roiling, if you will. And we've seen that over and over again, not just with the Nimitz incident. There's some incidents near off the coast of Puerto Rico. There's been some other incidents as well where the reporting by government officials has been that there is some sort of disturbance in the water. The question is, what is causing those disturbances? If you look at biology, for example, look at an alligator, we just now realized over the last maybe decade or two that there are ULFs, ultra low frequencies, acoustic signatures that are emitted by alligators when they are in mating season in the rivers and the lakes. And you can actually see as they put their head up, you can't hear it, But the water begins to what looks like a dance around them. And what's happening is these ultra low frequencies, acoustic frequencies, are perturbing the water, disturbing the water, and the metrics of the matrix of the water is part of. And so it begins to roil. You know, is this something similar? It could be. We don't know yet because we don't understand the technology fully. You know, but we suspect that this disturbance in the water could be could be a result of the technology being utilized. No different than a helicopter, perhaps, with its rotor wash perturbing the water. But rather than being a physical or mechanical perturbance, it might be due to some sort of electromagnetic interference that's occurring.
Right. Lou, I wanted to thank you for how open you are, how frank you are. I'm not used to that when I speak to people about this topic. So firstly, thank you about that.
Well, look, Kurt, I don't have all the answers, and I'm going to tell you that. You know, you're asking me direct questions, I'll give you direct answers. I'll do the best that I can. But you know, I don't have all the answers, and I'm not afraid to say that. I'm not afraid to.
And some are classified as well.
Yeah, and some details are definitely you know, sensitive.
You can't give out, right? And for the people watching in the chat, if I don't get to your question, please, it's because I'm in the moment with Lou. I don't want to keep switching tabs. I want to listen to Lou's answer and ask pertinent follow-up questions. Okay, Manny.
By the way, for the record, if I can, just real quick, sure. Let me go back. That your friend, Mr. Keating, I didn't mean any disrespect by that. Please make sure he knows that I just wanted to answer his question to the best of my ability. I wasn't trying to this wasn't a slam in any way. I just wanted to be as accurate as possible.
For sure. Manny Ortez asks, Lou once said on a podcast that someone from the Pentagon told him that they knew that this phenomenon are demons. Although Lou didn't seem to believe it, I would love for Lou to expand on that.
Well, Kurt, let me ask you this. You know, what is a demon? Right? I think most people would submit to you that a demon is some sort of supernatural being that is based in some sort of religious doctrine, and is usually, you know, malevolent to some degree. But, you know, let's look at this from a scientific perspective. All things by definition are supernatural until they're explained, until they're normal, right? This cellular telephone I'm speaking to you on, and the Wi-Fi signals 100 years ago would be completely supernatural. And yet in some parts of the world, actually, if I show a picture, you know, of somebody, then that's still supernatural. They think the soul is locked in the photograph. Everything is paranormal until it becomes normal. Everything is supernatural until it becomes natural. And that is the definition of it. It just means beyond our understanding of you know, what's before us. I can't tell anybody with a straight face that something is or is not demonic, because it really depends on what is your definition of a demon. And at the end of the day, you know, I've seen enough demons in my life in combat and warfare to know that, you know, there really is true evil in this world. A lot of it is man-made, but, you know, I can't discount that. I don't personally believe that myself, but you know, I'm a big firm believer of know thy enemy. If it turns out that these things are demonic, at least we know. You know, I'd rather know than to guess. You know, do I subscribe to that line of thinking that these are demons? No, not particularly.
What about angels?
Great question. Same, it's exactly the same thing. Angels and demons, you know, supernatural beings that we can't explain, that seem to fall outside the realm of what we consider being normal human behavior and normal human capabilities.
Let me steel man it. When I say steel man, hopefully you're familiar with the term. I think what the person is getting at is that let's presuppose in a certain worldview that there's a deity that created the universe with intent. And one of the first creatures they created were powerful beings that have divine powers. Some of those are angels, some of those are demons. And then humans were created, or let's say the Big Bang was set off, and then humans were created via the process of evolution. So do you see evidence, or do you have friends within ATIP who believe that those are demons in that sense, or angels in that sense even?
I didn't see that in ATIP. but I did see it in DOD leadership. You know, I certainly am not going to confront someone's spiritual beliefs about something. You know, the word angel comes from the word angelios, of light, of fire. Think of Helios, the sun, right? Our sun. These are terms that have been given to explain supernatural beings and occurrences in you know, during our existence. You know, I am, for one, I despite being a scientific man, I am a very much a spiritual. I don't wear my religion on my sleeve, but I don't think that the topic of UAPs or even potentially extraterrestrials is necessarily against.
Hear that sound? That's the sweet sound of success with Shopify. Shopify is the all-encompassing commerce platform that's with you from the first flicker of an idea to the moment you realize you're running a global enterprise. Whether it's handcrafted jewelry or high-tech gadgets, Shopify supports you at every point of sale, both online and in person. They streamline the process with the internet's best converting checkout, making it 36% more effective than other leading platforms. There's also something called Shopify Magic, your AI-powered assistant that's like an all-star team member working tirelessly behind the scenes. What I find fascinating about Shopify is how it scales with your ambition. No matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Join the ranks of businesses in 175 countries that have made Shopify the backbone of their commerce. Shopify, by the way, powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, including huge names like Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen. If you ever need help, their award-winning support is like having a mentor that's just a click away. Now, are you ready to start your own success story? Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theories, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theories now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/theories.
The idea of organized religion. When I went to Rome not too long ago, a year and a half ago maybe, and spoke to some very senior academics in the Vatican, they told me that in the 1600s, had you have told people there was no such thing as aliens, that would be considered heresy, because there is no limit to the dominion of God or the notion of God. And it's only been in relative recent history that we have put these limitations on what God can and can't do. You know, there can't be aliens because we have to be the most, you know, the divine, most divine representation of God. You know, so I find that topic fascinating, especially as it relates to theology and philosophy, and even sociology, our reaction to it as a species. But I did not come into contact with that. And if it was an A-tip, it was kept hidden from us. No one talked about that. No one seemed to have any type of religious aversion looking into this topic.
Razor blades are like diving boards. The longer the board, the more the wobble, the more the wobble, the more nicks, cuts, scrapes. A bad shave isn't a blade problem, it's an extension problem. Henson is a family-owned aerospace parts manufacturer that's made parts for the International Space Station and the Mars rover. Now they're bringing that precision engineering to your shaving experience. By using aerospace-grade CNC machines, Henson makes razors that extend less than the thickness of a human hair. The razor also has built-in channels that evacuates hair and cream, which make clogging virtually impossible. Henson Shaving wants to produce the best razors, not the best razor business. So that means no plastics, no subscriptions, no proprietary blades, and no planned obsolescence. It's also extremely affordable. The Henson razor works with the standard dual-edge blades that give you that old-school shave with the benefits of this new-school tech. It's time to say no to subscriptions and yes to a razor that'll last you a lifetime. Visit hensonshaving.com/everything. If you use that code, you'll get 2 years' worth of blades for free. Just make sure to add them to the cart. Plus 100 free blades when you head to hensonshaving.com/everything and use the code everything.
All right, the next question comes from Bisec Docs. Have we intercepted communication between UAPs, and or has there been communication with UAPs?
I'm not aware of any interception of communications with UAPs. As far as communication with UAPs, you know, once again, and I kind of hate to split hairs here. I don't want to upset anybody, but let's be specific. What does communicate mean? I mean, you and I are having a conversation in English and we're communicating, but if I stand behind a wall and I aim an assault rifle at you, am I communicating with you? Yeah, I am. I'm communicating an intent or a threat, right? If a dog growls and shows its teeth to you as you try to kneel down and pet it, is it communicating? Yeah, it's communicating. It's telling you, hey, you know, I don't want to be pet right now. I don't touch me. So, you know, if a UAP is behaving in a provocative manner, meaning it's obviously knows that we are aware that it is there and doesn't seem to mind, doesn't seem to try to hide itself in some cases. It's been perhaps hovering over you know, one of our military equities for a prolonged period of time. Is that communication? Well, I would submit to you, yes, it's probably communication. It's not verbal communication, but it's signaling some sort of intent. Yes, I know you're there. And yes, I know you know that I'm here and I'm okay with that. And I want you to know that I'm here. Now, what's the rationale? What's the reasoning intent behind it? We don't know, but that is communication. If you know, when we do a show of force, and if, you know, we fly an SR-71 at 100,000 feet and we don't want the enemy to see us. But if I take a couple F-22 Raptors and I fly off the coast of, let's say, a disputed territory in the South China Sea, I'm communicating with a country. It may not be through dialogue, but make no mistake, I'm communicating very clearly and very effectively my intent to another party. And so I think therein lies the question. Are these things trying to communicate with us? And if so, will we be smart enough to recognize it as some sort of communication versus just, you know, two ships passing in the night? I do think that the more brazen that these incidents become, the more there may be an attempt to try to communicate. They obviously, whatever it is aware that we are there and we are aware that they're there.
Are you aware of any more or of any less coarse-grained communication? For example, we can communicate with a cheetah, like you mentioned. We can point a gun at it or we can show our hostility or our civility. Is there verbal, as far as you know, has there been any verbal or even telepathic direct communication?
I'm sorry, my audio just cut off.
Has there been any verbal or telepathic communication? I know that there's a story about, I think, Zimbabwe, Africa, with aliens communicating with some children.
There's certainly reports of it. Doesn't mean that it's see, the problem is subjective. We don't know for sure. It's the human's interpretation of what's going on. And here is why we have to be so careful. As you know, in a scientific experiment and in a closed system, you know, the likelihood of human error is increased significantly. And so, you know, we have to be cognizant of that. Is there some sort of real communication, as you say, telepathic communication occurring, or is it a similar effect to, let's say, taking a hallucinogenic drug and having some sort of experience, right? Mental experience. I don't know the answer to that. The answer could be yes or both or none. It could be that there is, it's just our impression of what's going on. And it's not real, right? Like a near-death experience. A lot of people report it being real. A lot of people say, no, it's just parts of the mind that are beginning to shut down and you start, you know, having these experiences. I don't think anybody really knows for sure other than the people who've actually experienced it. When you talk to them, they feel very compelled that they've had a real event. And I don't doubt for 1 minute they actually believe they've had some sort of communication. And by the way, that could be the case.
Because, right.
Again, there's no way to prove it or disprove it. So it's interesting. But we didn't focus on that part of ATIP because it's too subjective. You can't quantify and qualify that data like you can with radar data and photographic evidence, et cetera. So it wasn't particularly useful. Not that I'm saying it was not interesting. It just wasn't useful for our calculus.
As to the connection between psychedelics and aliens or psychedelics and UAPs, you're unaware of any credible, verifiable, falsifiable data?
Well, look, I mean, now we're getting into the world of consciousness, you know, and I would submit to you, is not everything we do a result of a conscious process occurring in our brain. By very definition, everything I do in life is a result of some sort of willful intent based upon a consciousness process occurring in my brain, just like you and everybody else. So, we realize that human consciousness is an area that we're just now beginning to explore, and we understand even less. Is it possible that human consciousness is part of a universal consciousness, and that we can tap into this? Human consciousness is not only for humans, possibly. I mean, there's people out there who have pet cats and dogs. I'm one of them, where, you have a connection with your pet, not because it's just a cat or a dog, but because there's something deeper that you are connecting with, something far more intimate, something far more sacred than just a furry little bag of skin and hairballs. There's something. And by the way, that life form recognizes you as well as a sentient being. There's this appreciation that, hey, we're on the same wavelength. I may not look like you, I may not act like you or talk like you, but we're kind of the same thing. We're both conscious, sentient beings, and we recognize that in each other. And that they also may explain human interactions as well. So consciousness may not be something that is only owned and defined by the human species. Is it possible there's other things? If we can communicate with dolphins and cats and dogs and birds and gorillas, maybe human consciousness isn't quite so, maybe it's not so special. Maybe it's indelible. Maybe it's something that's part of all of nature. And when I say all of nature, even beyond this planet, perhaps.
The next question comes from Mick West. I'd like to ask Lou Elizondo, I'll just read this verbatim. If he really thinks this is non-human technology that can revolutionize the world and maybe include contact with aliens and extra-dimensional beings and so on, why is he so concerned with NDAs? Surely for the good of humanity, he should release the evidence that he has.
Surely for the good of humanity. And then he can go ahead and pay for my mortgage. He can put my kids through school. He can come visit me every day and give me soup while I'm behind bars, spending the next 4 years of my life, doing a service for somebody else. I've already put my neck on the line. So all due respect, Mr. West, if why don't you, there's nothing stopping you. Why don't you do it? I've already put my career, my reputation and credibility on the line. I've already foregone my retirement and my pension. How much more else do you expect me to sacrifice? You want me to put myself up on a cross and nail myself to it? Just because, I think we've come pretty far so far. I think I haven't had to go to jail, and we've come pretty damn far in the last 3 years. I guess a simple "you're welcome" is probably, would be my response.
Are there whistleblower protection acts that you could reveal information under?
Well, this is part of the IG process. This is part of Congress. There are people that I can speak with without violating my non-disclosure agreement that can further the conversation, and this is what we're trying to exercise. I mean, I've tried to be as clear as I can with our roadmap moving forward without jeopardizing it. But if people have noticed one thing about me is that I'm deliberate. I don't do anything haphazard. So all the stuff that people are now seeing with conversations and Congress and IG, do people honestly think that's just some sort of coincidence? I mean, guys, if you look at what I've been saying the last 3 years, you're going to see a pattern. It's very clear. You're going to say everything I've said has come to fruition, lock, stock, and barrel. We're trying to do this the right way. And as I said before, there's a difference between doing things right and right now. And I prefer to do things right. This is a process. I told people from day one, if you're expecting instant gratification, then, go take up something else. Go take up finger painting. Don't do this, because this is going to be a long term effort. And it's every day the due diligence of what we're doing, but it's making a difference. Just look at the last 3 years, how far we've come. We have an official UAP task force. We have the government admitting that UFOs are real. We have Congress being briefed at the classified level. They're all coming out saying this is important. We actually have the task force now providing information to Congress in a 180-day report. We have other countries like Japan coming out and reaching out and wanting to share their information with us. I mean, man, how much more do you want in 3 years? Forgive me for being a little bit, testy about this.
That's fine. Do questions like that annoy you? Do you get them frequently and you're tired of them?
Well, you know what? It's armchair quarterbacking. It's easy for people to sit back. I see it all the time on social media. Just violate your NDA, Lou. It's okay. You go to jail for us. It's okay. But they're not willing to do, you know, 1/10 of that sacrifice for this effort. If you ask them, hey, get off your ass and go talk to your congressman, or, you know, start doing research and start going out and being a force multiplier for this effort. They want, I'm too tired. I got too much go. I'm too busy. Well, I got my family to take care of. Well, so do I. I'm not different. Why am I being held to a different standard? Why am I have to be, you know, the person coming out there and just say hell to everybody and wind up having to go run and hide in some foreign country and never come back to my country? I love my country. By the way, my non-disclosure agreement I took was a promise I made to the American people, not my government. And so I think it's really disingenuous to say, well, you can just break your promise this time for the truth. No, I can't. That's like saying, well, you can cheat on your wife this time, or you know, you can cheat on your family this time. It won't matter. Yes, it does matter. Every time matters. It's a promise. That's what a promise is. Either you're a man of your word or a woman of your word, or you're not. Otherwise, and they're called principles, and people fight and die for those principles. And, you know, I've seen people fight and die for those principles. You know, they're not just something that you conveniently throw around. Oh, I promise to do this. And then really later on say, no, I don't really promise. You know, that's not the way promises work. Those are the kind of people that don't survive in combat, because people don't have your back. You know, you swear an oath of an allegiance to do the right thing. That's what this is about. You know, I don't understand people who can just say, hey, go ahead and break your promise this one time. I mean, what are you talking about? You'd never trust me again. I can't break this one time, because the one time I do, then I could do it 1,000 times. And at that point, I might as well throw in the towel. Mm-hmm. So
I understand. Anyways. Lou, let me push back. I'm on your side, man. So let me just be friendly and push back. With regard to breaking a promise, to me, that seems like the difference between, as Jesus said, the spirit of the law versus the text of the law. So do you see an obligation to the spirit of the law rather than the text? So the text says you have to obey this promise.
Well, he also said follow the law of the land too, didn't he? And so, you know, the law of the land here is that he took an oath and a promise to the American people. And I'm not going to violate that promise. It's you can't break a promise to fulfill a promise. It doesn't work that way.
Please, let me push back. Gently. Okay. This is something I've been thinking about. Sometimes trust needs to be broken in order for it to be regained in the long term stronger. So, for example, you mentioned cheating on a spouse. Sometimes one has to come clean and say, I did cheat, in order for the relationship to eventually be repaired, even though that in the short run is going to be far worse.
Wouldn't it be better not to cheat at all and not have to do that? Yeah, you're right. If you cheat, you need to admit you cheated. But isn't it better just not to cheat, and you don't have to worry about that?
I agree. Okay, so in this analogy, the cheating would be, let's say you had some piece of information that says that our world is vastly different and potentially even dangerous or wasteful on behalf of the government. Do you see a sense of duty to the citizens to break your oath? I know you say that it's the oath with the citizens themselves, but you understand where I'm going with this.
But you don't have to. There are mechanisms in place that you don't have to break that oath to fulfill a promise. That's what I'm trying to say here. It's not an either or.
It just takes more time.
And by the way, it's a lot more. Yeah, it takes more time. But it's the right way to do it. That is the correct way to do it than just going ahead and I won't be able to live with myself doing that. No one will ever take me seriously again. Nobody could ever trust me if I break that promise just that one time. That's not the way it works. So, you know, I think the proof is in the pudding. And, I, you know, honestly, bottom line is I'm not going to break it. So people can keep asking me all day long, and they're wasting their oxygen, because I am not going to break that promise. I will not violate my non-disclosure agreement.
Got it.
And by the way, I'll tell you, if it comes to the point where I have to actually stop doing this to maintain my promise, I will. I will disappear. You'll never hear from Lou again. If the option in between comes down to me having to speak or having to and break my promise or being quiet, I will be quiet. I will not break my promise. And if people can't accept that, then, you know, fine. Talk to somebody else. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, I'm grateful that you're not quiet right now. And thank you for speaking with me. Lonesome Space Cowboy asks, I just have one question, pretty subjective, but I'd like to hear his take. If the general public knew and saw what Lewis knows and has seen, what would the world look like for the next week after that? How would the public react? So this is, you can surmise.
Wow. What a thoughtful question. Boy, I have no idea, Kurt. That's I would need to think about that.
Okay, we can get back to that question.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good question. I don't want to just throw out an answer.
And right.
I want to think about that, and I might need even a little bit more time. I will for sure get back to you on that, but that's going to take some thought.
Great. I'm going to take a question from the audience. So Genshin says, Tom DeLong says that the occupants of the UAPs are called the Others, in quotation. Do you know anything about this?
That's what he wants to name them, you know. My German Shepherd is named Hercules, you know, but you can call him whatever you want. I mean, it's a name, right? Is he calling them the Others? Do the Others call themselves Others? Or, you know, I would probably ask Tom that question. I can't answer that question.
Here's something I heard when I was looking up some interviews with Bob Lazar, that the aliens refer to us as containers, or at least he read that. He can't substantiate it. Have you heard this, and what do you make of it?
Not a clue. And who was that you said? Was that Bob Lazar you said?
Yeah.
I can't speak for Mr. Lazar. I've never met the man. Don't know. He was not part of the agent effort. And therefore, I can't expound upon that. I wouldn't even know where to begin with that. I have no idea.
Between you and I, this is like a foray for me because my background is in physics and math. And I had no idea that people were so divisive when it comes to Bob Lazar and just individuals in this UFO community in general, that if you say you believe them, then you're ostracized. Or if you say that you don't believe them, you're also ostracized by a certain subset. Do you have views on Bob Lazar, whether you find him credible?
I've never met him. I don't know his background. I don't know his story. I do know George Knapp. He's very credible. I don't know anything more than I guess George Knapp may have helped break the story at one point. But I don't know Mr. Lazar. And out of due respect for Mr. Lazar and his family and those his friends, colleagues, and those in the community, I don't have a comment. You know, it's that's part of the problem. People offer a lot of what they think instead of what they know. And so when you mention someone like that, people automatically, you know, well, I think this, I think that. Well, okay, I respect that. But the question is, what do we know? And right now, I don't know a whole lot about Mr. Lazar. So it's not fair for me to really provide any type of opinion one way or the other.
You're watching this channel because you're interested in theoretical physics, consciousness, and the ostensible connection between the two. What's required to follow some of these arguments is facility with mathematics as well as discernment of the underlying physical laws, and you may think that this is beyond you, but that's false. Brilliant provides pellucid explanations of abstruse phenomena such as quantum computing, general relativity, and even group theory. When you hear that the standard model is based on U1 cross SU2 cross SU3, that's group theory, for example. Now, this isn't just for neophytes either. For example, I have a degree in math and physics, and I still found some of the intuitions given in these lessons to vastly aid my penetration into these subjects, for example, electricity and magnetism. Sign up today at brilliant.org/toe, that is TOE, for free. You'll also get 20% off the annual premium subscription. Try 4 of the lessons at least. Don't stop before 4. And I think you'll be greatly surprised at the ease at which you comprehend subjects you previously had trouble grokking. Links are in the description. Pulsating Shadow asks, how frequently do abductions happen among civilian/military personnel? And is there substance to the rumor of human mutilation? I also want to ask you about cattle mutilation at some point, but that's that.
Abductions is something we didn't really look at innate because it's, again, too subjective. We're relying on the human being to give us data without anything else really substantiating that, unlike radar data and gun camera footage. I'm aware of a lot of those reports, but I don't have a comment either way. I simply don't know. And as interesting as it may be, it wasn't overly helpful to the perspective of our efforts native to the specific calculus we were working on. Remember, what is it and how does it work? that really didn't come into play. Now, as far as human mutilation, that's another topic that I'm completely unqualified to discuss because I simply don't know. Certainly, if that is the case, then we are dealing with a potential threat, possibly hostile intent, because from where I come from as a former investigator and special agent, that's a crime. First of all, it's called kidnapping. Second of all, it's called assault. And third of all, it may even be in an extreme case, it could be considered, first degree premeditated murder. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know anything about that really. I am aware of the cattle mutilations a little bit more because I've spoken to some veterinarians and some doctors. There's a lot of prosaic explanations. I think it's fascinating. It's interesting. But I'm not a certified medical doctor nor a coroner, so I can't look at a cadaver of a bovine of a cow and say the lips were removed with surgical precision without any type of heat ablation or cauterization, and yet it was a perfect clean cut. There's no bleeding. I don't know what can cause that. I don't know if there's a natural process that can explain that. I haven't seen one, but maybe there is. Could it be predatory behavior of coyotes eating that part of the meat that is most rich in nutrients or accessible? I don't know the answer. Or is it something else? There's a lot of people who say there's perhaps something else to it. I don't really know.
This one comes from Lady Char Reacts. Mr. Elizondo, do you think there was another craft under the water that was causing the UAP disturbance that Commander Fravor reported?
Great question. It's exactly what we're trying to figure out. There's some other stories that are going to come to light, some other incidents that are going to be, I think, fairly riveting when people find out, that what's occurred in and around some of our military operations. It's possible there could be something underneath the water. It could also be a reaction to the technology being employed by what's ever on top of the water. We don't know yet. I think we're getting a little bit closer to answering that. Of course, if we can get some sonar data to validate, maybe there's something in the water at the same time as we see something in the air, that would be very helpful in substantiating that.
Amjad Hussein, who actually sponsors the podcast with his company Algo, asks, are any alien bodies in possession of the U.S. government?
So, Mr. Hussein, again, great question. It's a question that a lot of people want to know, and it's a question that I can't answer because I haven't been privy to that. I do not know if there's any type of biological organisms that are in the possession of the U.S. government. I do believe, as I've said before for the record, that we are in possession of material. I won't elaborate into more than that. But as far as having biological specimens, it's something that I can't answer. And I don't want to mislead anybody. I don't want to say I think, because it doesn't matter what I think. What matters is what the facts say. So forgive me. Sorry.
No problem. Yeah. Man, I'm having a blast, man. Thank you so much.
I've been burning the midnight oil, man. Yeah. So I do apologize.
Well, I know you have a hugely busy schedule. And so even for a modicum of your time, I'm immensely grateful. And personally, I'm curious if what's going on at Skinwalker. Did ATIP study that? And I know you don't like to espouse, but what do you think is going on there? Sub question. Let me say before I forget it. And then I wanted to know, what is there a connection between Bigfoot and UFOs? Because there seems to be a confluence of that at Skinwalker, at least.
So I work with colleagues that were focused on the OSAP and the Skinwalker phenomenon. What I can say is that they are very convinced, and I think I am too, that there are things that probably go bump in the night that probably need further explanation. But that was not my portfolio, and I don't want to speak to that because I simply don't know. That was done at a time with the tremendous efforts of Mr. Bigelow and the former director, OSAP director, and a lot of folks from Bigelow Aerospace. And the data was very compelling. I'll say that it was absolutely compelling. And I think Mr. Brandon Fugel now and others have recognized the validity of some of that data. That's all I'm prepared to say about that. As far as Bigfoot, I'm going to share something with you. And I hope that this doesn't turn anybody off.
It's probably going to turn me on.
I had the great honor and privilege of speaking with some people from the First Nations of Saskatchewan, Indigenous people, the Lakota and Dakota bands. These are individuals who are fiercely proud, have an incredible heritage, and have nearly 10,000 years of oral tradition, okay, in this continent. And they have an incredible connection to the land. And I was asked by someone there, and I'm not going to say who it was, but a very senior individual who was associated with the First Nations people. And he asked me, he said, "I want to ask you a question, Lou. Have you ever seen Sasquatch?" I said, "No, sir." He says, "I'm going to ask you one more time. Are you sure you've never seen Sasquatch?" I said, "Sir, I've never seen Sasquatch." And he said, "Well, that's good. Because from my people's perspective, Sasquatch is a spirit that protects our women and children and a spirit of the forest. And if you see a man see Sasquatch, it means your heart is impure." And I wasn't prepared for that. I was like, "Holy smokes, sure glad I haven't seen Sasquatch."
Interesting.
But yeah, that was there was their take. Very, very interesting.
But who among us have pure hearts?
Well, that's a whole other question, right? I don't think any of us really do have pure hearts, but the fact that they see it that way, I found very, very interesting. It's very unique perspective, and I think if anybody has a right to have a narrative on Sasquatch, it's certainly Indigenous people. So I found that, again, I can't tell you whether or not that's true. I can just tell you what was told to me, but. You know, there you have it.
As for Skinwalker in general, you just think your statement is there is something that's going bump in the night, or you think there is. Nothing more can be said about that. I'm hugely interested in Skinwalker.
You know, Kurt, at some point.
More is to be revealed.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to go down any rabbit holes prematurely. You know, this is a very. This is a very complex universe we live in, and it's a system. And we're learning more and more about the reality of life and the transition of what birth means and the transition of what death means and you know, human consciousness and human spirit and whatnot. And, you know, suffice it to say, we probably really don't have a very good handle right now on understanding what lies beyond our five senses. I've said this before, we have five fundamental senses for which we judge our environment. And if you can't touch it, taste it, hear it, smell it, or, you know, feel whatever, it doesn't exist. And yet the reality is 99.9% of the universe lies well beyond our ability to sense these things. We have Wi-Fi signals coursing through your body every moment of every day. We have cosmic radiation coming from the cosmos. We've got neutrinos that are flooding your body from the sun. And we've got cellular signals and radar signatures that are coming from the local airport. And all these are real. And I tell people, if you want to know the reality of the universe, look at a night sky one night and look how pretty it is. Now take a radio telescope and look at that same night sky. Look at it through infrared. Look at it through ultraviolet. And you're going to see things you've never seen before. And so by definition, 99% of our knowable universe, we can't even perceive. And then when you look at the scale of the universe, and I've said this before, if you look at, you know, I was corrected recently that the visible galaxy, the visible known universe is about 90 some billion light years across, even though it's only been around for 13.7 billion light years, we think. That the actual the seeable universe right now around us is about 97 billion light years. And as big as that is in terms of us being this little tiny minute thing stuck in the middle of it, there is equally that amount of space, relative space inside every one of us. If you look at an atom, which is 1 times 10 to the minus 26 in size in a mole, compared that to the human body, we have that same amount of space inside every one of us. There's a whole universe inside of us. And so the scale in which we live, unless something is 50 feet in front of our face, we'll never be able to interact with anything that is an order of magnitude above us or below us. We can't even see the cells in our bodies without a microscope. So there are these realities all around us that constantly that exist and that we are part of, and yet we cannot interact with. And by that definition, 99.9% of the universe falls outside of the realm of our perception. So who's to say that all of reality needs to fit neatly within the very narrow spectrum of the electro-optical frequency that we call visible light, when we know that that's not true? Same thing with acoustics, same thing with electromagnetics, same thing with everything. And I think it's foolhardy for science to presume that everything can be explained through the fundamental five senses and the scale in which we live, because we know that's not true. Look at dark energy and dark matter. Most of the universe can't even be seen.
All right, even the fundamental forces. Who knows if there's more?
Fundamental forces, right. Strong force, weak force, electromagnetism, right. So I think we need to remember, if you are truly a scientist, we must remain open to the fact that we are judging our environment through a very, very narrow lens. It's like sitting up on the bleachers, watching a football game at the very, very highest part of a bleachers and watching the whole game through a soda straw. You're going to miss most of it, you know? So that'd be my two cents.
Emil S. says, thanks. Thank Lewis for me. Without him, we wouldn't be where we are today with regard to this matter. And Mr. Roboto also says, thank you, Mr. Elizondo, for your service to this country.
Oh, my pleasure. You know what? Everybody serves in their own way. If you're a taxpayer, you're serving. If you are a school teacher, you're serving. If you're a nurse, you're serving. If you're a police officer, you're a person in military uniform. You know, if you're a lawyer and you decide to take a case pro bono because it's the right thing to do, guess what? You're serving. So thank you for all those out there who continue to serve. You know, it's a great honor and privilege to be speaking with you here today.
Thank you, man. Andreas says, hey, Lou, are there questions you think that the public hasn't been asking that we ought to be? What should we be asking?
I was going to be flippant for a second, but no.
Go ahead.
No, I think you're on the right track. I think people are asking the right questions. I do. I think people are coming around to reality of this new paradigm. And that's good. That's okay. That's a good thing. Otherwise we stagnate.
Hear that sound? That's the sweet sound of success with Shopify. Shopify is the all-encompassing commerce platform that's with you from the first flicker of an idea to the moment you realize you're running a global enterprise. Whether it's handcrafted jewelry or high-tech gadgets, Shopify supports you at every point of sale, both online and in person. They streamline the process with the internet's best converting checkout, making it 36% more effective than other leading platforms. There's also something called Shopify Magic, your AI-powered assistant that's like an all-star team member working tirelessly behind the scenes. What I find fascinating about Shopify is how it scales with your ambition. No matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Join the ranks of businesses in 175 countries that have made Shopify the backbone of their commerce. Shopify, by the way, powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, including huge names like Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen. If you ever need help, their award-winning support is like having a mentor that's just a click away. Now, are you ready to start your own success story? Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theories, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theories now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/theories.
It is species.
Jen Hagany asks, on April 30th, I believe of this year, in the basement office interview, Lou said, watch out for the next 30 days. Now, what was he referencing?
All of it. A lot has happened in the 30 days.
Why don't you give a breakdown for the people like myself who are new to this field that have little clue? Imagine I'm clueless, which I am.
Sure. You have very senior level briefings happening to Congress. You have Congress wanting potentially to do open hearings. You have an IG evaluation underway. to look at how the government's been handling this topic over the last 3 years. You've got quite a bit of things happening right now. We've got foreign governments that haven't quite come out yet that are beginning to engage the United States. You have discussions on creating a long-term enduring capability to look at this effort, full of government approach.
Okay. Speaking about the world government, not that there is one, but you
understand. And by the way, Kurt, I'm being told right now, I've got just about a couple few more minutes because I have another, unfortunately, one more engagement I have to do.
That's no problem, man. Okay.
My apologies.
No problem. I appreciate the time that you've given. So Blinderize asks, all of this recent disclosure and activity has been very U.S. focused. It would be interesting to know if other countries are working on this stuff too, or are cooperating at some level. The implication is that whoever can reverse engineer this tech first wins, but isn't it best to give our chance to all humans?
Yes, 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 and yes. Yes on all four parts. Yes, there are other countries working on this. Yes, there are other governments that are reaching out to work with us. Yes, that he who reveals the secret first has the advantage. And yes, this would be better for humanity if we worked it all together.
Mikhail Mayhall asks, did ATIP look into the USS Trepang photos from 1971?
Negative. We did not.
Neon Dagger, has Lewis ever had a personal encounter, whether it was close up or at a distance, with an intelligence or some kind of machine? I assume they were referring to the UAPs.
That will be for another discussion.
Okay, and I'll get to just two more quick questions. Okay, Paul Sawford asks, I would like his take on the Tic Tac movement at sea level. Actually, forget that question. Sorry, Paul. There's a better question.
Don't feel bad, Paul. I would have answered it.
Okay, Rayson Carlos asks, could you ask him about the Nimitz case? David Fravers said that the Tic Tac shaped UFO, after disappearing from his view, appeared to the radar operator at his quote-unquote cap point. What does this represent? How on earth did the UFO know the cap point beforehand?
Great question. We don't know how it knew. That or it's one hell of a coincidence. A cap point is a rendezvous point that is input into the flight plan of the pilots and the avionics systems of the aircraft. In this case, it was about 60 miles away from their location where they encountered the Tic Tac. And within 5 seconds, this thing appeared over their cap point, seemingly anticipating where they were supposed to go and waiting for them. Great question. Is this some sort of active exploitation of the avionics, or is this some sort of predetermination understanding where the plane was going to go because somehow it understands space-time in a different way than we do? Or was it just a pure coincidence? We simply don't know.
And the last question I asked you before, which I'm going to get back to, actually Hunting Hare says, Sam Harris said that he was contacted by the former DOD/intelligence officials about some possible form of disclosure. Was it Lou or Mellon?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one more
Okay. time? So Sam Harris recently said that he was contacted by someone from the former DOD intelligence, and he wants to know, and Sam Harris was talking about a possible form of disclosure. Was this person who contacted Sam Harris
Lou or Mellon?
I have
no
idea
who Sam Harris is. Neither does Chris.
Okay. And then I know you got to get going. The Lonesome Space Cowboy, remember that last question that you couldn't get to, which was, if the general public knew or saw what you saw, what would the next week look like? How would the public react?
Somber. I think there would be this big exhale for about a day. And then this turning inward and trying to reflect on what this means to us and our species and ourselves.
Somber, like a sigh of relief?
Somber meaning serious. Not like Hollywood portrays people partying in the streets and silliness like that. I think you would have some people perhaps turning to religion more so. You might have some people turning away from religion. I think you're going to have, at that point, the philosophical and theological questions will be raised, and people will have some serious soul searching to do, no pun intended. And I don't think that's bad, by the way. I think a lot of folks that have spent their times in this community being charlatans will have been exposed, and they will be probably unemployed and probably have to change their names because, you know, the rest of society will look at them in an unfavorable light. I think there are some unsung heroes that will probably come to light, and the world will appreciate their contributions to this topic. I think the scientific community, academic communities.
I was going to say is names that have been announced before when you say the unsung heroes or new names.
Yeah, names that haven't been announced before.
Okay.
I think the scientific and academic community is going to have to take a real hard look at itself see why it repeated the same mistakes it did when Galileo first proposed that the Earth was not the center of the solar system. Hubris is a big part of that. And then I think, you know, maybe we start the international conversation, say, okay, we realize that there's some things out there that are probably well beyond our petty discrepancies we have with each other. Maybe we really need to start working together on this, realize that we are really a global family. Doesn't matter where you're from, or it doesn't matter what your religion is, or your culture, or your color, or anything else. We are all brothers and sisters on this tiny little rock called Earth. You know, this pale blue dot that's hurtling through space.
It may unify us.
Well, I would certainly hope so. Unless we allow our poor nature to interfere, and we look at this as opportunities to subjugate each other. I would hope that's not the case.
Lou, thank you so much. Do you have any advice for me as someone investigating this topic somewhat anew and somewhat...
Sure, keep pushing, keep asking the questions and be fearless. You know, that is the true scientific pioneering spirit, the ability to challenge the status quo and be able to do so in a courageous way and in a well-meaning way. The true enemy of science is stagnation. Is acceptance of the norms, because we know that's not real. Science changes, our understanding changes because we're human and humans change. So, we need to continue to pursue the truth, wherever that truth may be. We need to continue to pursue it. So that'd be my advice.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. What do you have to promote? Where can the audience find out more about you? What's next for you?
Kurt, I hate self-promoting, man. I'm not that guy. You know, I hate even tweeting. I do it because I want to keep people engaged, because I really appreciate everybody's perspectives. I just want to promote the truth wherever that truth is. A lot of people don't realize I don't get paid for these type of things. I'm actually taking off work to do it because I believe in it so much.
You're not paid by the government to spread misinformation? Is that what you're saying?
Oh yeah, every day, sure. Yeah, I mean, if that's what certainly these conspiracy theorists like to believe, anyways, you know. By the way, if that's the case, I'm sure not making a whole lot of money doing it. All BS aside, no, I'm not being paid. It's just information. Still wearing my counterintelligence hat, and I'm trying to deceive the American public. I mean, that's just nonsense. That's that. Same crap that has held that conspiracy theory that's kept the ufology community behind for 70 years. You know, it's time to grow up, you know, wake up and stop thinking everybody's out to get you. You know, yeah, there's been some mistakes done in the past, but, you know, there's some people that actually want to see the truth come out, you know, and I'm one of those guys. If you don't like what I have to say, then don't listen. You know, I'm not forcing anybody to tune in and listen. I'm not, you know, forcing you to sit down on a couch. You know, if you don't like what I have to say, this is a free country. Thank God, you know, go tune into something else.
Well, I listen to you, and hopefully once the dust settles, we can have a longer conversation, perhaps even in person once COVID is over.
I would love that, Kurt. Anytime you want. It would be my honor and privilege.
Thank you, man. You make me feel giddy by saying that, even if it's just politeness. Thank you so much, man.
No, listen, people know me personally. I am that guy. I say what I mean. If I say that we're going to do coffee, we will be damn sure we're going to do coffee at some point. So I don't say these things lightly. I mean what I say.
Thank you, Lou. Have a great one. I apologize for keeping you over time. Thank you.
No worries.
And just say bye to everyone. They're so happy to see you. Let's see how many
people.
Thank
you to your audience. I hope I didn't offend anybody. That wasn't my intent.
There are almost 3,000 people watching right now.
Wow. That's great, Kurt. Well, you know, I've always told people I'm Latin. I've got to have my coffee. There's a few things that we come out of the womb having to do, and strong coffee is one of them. So I apologize if I was a little bit ornery today. That wasn't my intent, but I'm going to go get some coffee and I'll fix myself right up.
All right, man. Get to it. Take care.
Yes, sir. Take care, everybody. Thank you so much. And God bless everybody.
Okay. Thank you all for attending. I'm going to go through some of the chat. I wasn't able to get to everyone's questions. Again, for those who are new to this channel, this is not a UFO channel per se. I'm interested in something called the theory of everything, which is an approach in physics that tries to unify all the fundamental forces and find the laws of the universe, what governs us. And I'm broadly interested in that, which means I'm interested in it from a theoretical physics perspective, as well as from a philosophical perspective, perhaps even a psychological perspective, though that one has only been explored with someone named John Vervaeke on this channel. Thank you all. Thank you all. There's so many names. I can't say thank you to all of you, and I appreciate it. If you all would like to see more conversations like this on a regular basis, longer conversations like this, more intense conversations like this, I try to keep it technical because partially that's how my mind works, and also because I think that to get to some of these truths, as Luis Elizondo says, a specific, exact, rigorous approach is necessary. There's plenty of broad interviews, fluff, which I don't demean at all because they're great for getting an overarching view, but I like to get down into the weeds. If you'd like to see more of that, please consider going to patreon.com/KurtJaimungal. The link is in the description of this. The link is also pinned. Each dollar genuinely helps. So for example, right now I'm standing because I was able to afford a standing desk. Sounds like a minor treat, but it's a major one for me. It also helps me do this full time. As for Chris Langan, someone mentioned Chris Langan. I am studying Chris Langan's work. He has a cognitive theoretic model of the universe. I have some of his papers right here. Going through that meticulously, that will take about 2 or 3 more weeks. Okay, as for Eric Weinstein, yes, I will be talking to Eric Weinstein in about a month or 2 months when I've had a chance to go through his theory of everything. That's provided that he's able to at that point. Again, thank you all so much.
Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.